can't wait.
That's right, Jet Nation. We can't wait, and we do appreciate you joining us once again for another wonderful episode of Jet Nation Radio. This is Dennis Agapito, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Mr. Tyson Rausch. So, Tyson, how are you doing this evening?
Dennis, I'm doing great, man. Free agency's around the corner. A lot of speculation, a lot of rumors. It's a great time of year for a football fan.
Yeah, it is. It is terrific, and I'm just going to let the audience know that we'll be taking calls later in the show, but you can join the discussion via Twitter. It's at Jet Nation Radio. And we're pleased to be joined by a special guest tonight, and it's former sports agent Joel Curry. Now, Joel is an NFL analyst specializing in the business aspects of the league from contracts to salary caps. He's a columnist for National Football Post, a CBSSports.com contributor. He's been a guest on SiriusXM's NFL channel, and he was also recently a guest on the Ross Tucker podcast. And you can follow Joel on Twitter. The handle is at Corey Joel. Let me give you the spelling of that. That's CorryJoel. So, Joel, Dennis Agapito and Tyson Rausch here at Jet Nation Radio, we really appreciate you coming on and giving us some of your time tonight.
Oh, thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, it really is our pleasure, and why don't we just jump right into it? You know what? The franchise tag designation is over, and we kind of know who's going to make it to free agency, and we got a lot of things to discuss. And I guess first and foremost, if you could just provide us, because the numbers are kind of all over the place, right now where the Jets stand as far as their cap situation, how far under the cap after franchising Folk? I know that there are some likely cuts, but right now where do they stand as far as their salary cap?
Right now, the Jets have about $23.6 million in cap room, but that can easily balloon to over $40 million with the obvious cuts, Mark Sanchez, Santonio Holmes, and then the questionable one is Antonio Cromartie. Is he going to be a salary cap casualty, pay cut guy, or do you try to do what the Baltimore Ravens did and lower the cap number and extend him on a much cheaper deal?
So, I mean, if you were John Idzik, I mean, what would you look at as far as, like, a number that you're comfortable with Cromartie, paying him and a cap number? I mean, would an extension with maybe a little bit of a signing bonus and a lower base salary, maybe $3 or $4 million lower than what he's supposed to make this year, be the avenue you'd go, or would you try a simple restructure with just lowering his salary this year? You know, if you were John Idzik, what would you look to do?
I wouldn't extend him. After what happened last year, and maybe you can say he was injured, but his play wasn't the same as it was when Revis was out with the knee injury. I would drop that $9.5 million salary down to the $5 million range for the year, so I could chop off about four and a half from the cap. And the reason I use that number is last year in free agency, you had cornerbacks sign one-year prove-it deals, Brent Grimes for $5.5 million, Aqib Talib at $5 million, and also you had Dominique Rogers Cromartie sign a one-year deal for $5 million. So that'd be about the appropriate range for him to make this year in the final year of his deal. Thing is, they have to make a decision on him very quickly because he has a $5 million third day of the new league year roster bonus, which means if he's on the roster at the end of that business day, they own $5 million. So this thing's going to come to a head very quickly.
Joe, I'd like to touch on two of the free agents that Jets currently have on their roster. And the first one that I guess for me is most important is Austin Howard. I mean, it looks like he could be prepared to hit free agency. If you were the Jets, what kind of contract would you offer Howard to keep him in the fold?
Well, he's a right tackle, and right tackles don't command the same amount of money as left tackles, at least not yet, even though you saw two guys drafted at the top of the draft who were playing right tackle as rookies. The top of that market is Godster Chehrolos at $7 million a year and like $17 million in guarantees. And you saw a guy like Andre Smith priced himself out of free agency last year, where he scrambled for Cincinnati to give him $18 million over 3 years right around draft time. And even a guy who's a better tackle than Austin Howard when healthy, and that's the big thing, when healthy, Sebastian Vollmer has a base value of $17 million over 4 years, which could max out to $27 million over 4 years. But a lot of that, but that extra $10 million is primarily tied into playtime, or some of it in honors. So I wouldn't want to go more than $5 million a year to re-sign Austin Howard, and maybe give him somewhere $10 to $12 million guarantees over that. But if he's trying to become the highest-paid right tackle, he could be in for a rude awakening.
Yeah, I was kind of seeing the same thing, where he may be trying to – he may play his cards wrong, and he could be walking. The second guy I was curious about was outside linebacker Calvin Pace. Last year he had a career year with his 10 sacks. You know, he played a veteran's minimum deal. And I think this year he may be looking for more. Do you see the Jets going above, you know, what they gave Pace last year? Do you think they're going to try to keep him in the fold, or – they may just say, you know, they got lucky last year and just let him walk?
Well, that year kind of came out of nowhere, because he'll be 34 before the season ends. So he's kind of long in the tooth. So I don't know if you get coax another year like that out of him. There's an older pass rusher you can look at as maybe a benchmark or data point, who also priced himself out of the market last year, John Abraham. He didn't sign until the start of training camp with the Arizona Cardinals. That was a two-year deal for base value of $4.6 million, which could max out at $5.3 million. So maybe you sign Pace to a one-year deal at $2 million. Maybe you go to maybe 4 or 5 over two, if you think you can get 2 years out of him, because he definitely outperformed that contract last year. But basically, the previous three seasons, he had 13 sacks. So which is the real Calvin Pace? Was last year an anomaly? You can go back to a guy that's at most a 5-sack-per-season guy.
Yeah, and that was my concern. I thought that he kind of maybe benefited from the improvement up the middle with Sheldon Richardson and Damon Harrison. The one guy that kind of piqued my interest a little bit with the Jason Worlds signing his tender was the possibility of Lamar Woodley being cut by the Steelers. Do you see a big market for Woodley, and what do you think the market for him would be?
Well, I think World signing the transition tender kind of sealed his fate in Pittsburgh, because they have serious cap issues. He's kind of had a up-and-down year last year, Woodley, that is. He's going to be approaching 30, so you're getting at that age where you got to be careful. I don't see anyone paying him the $25.5 million left over the last 3 years of his contract with Pittsburgh. Maybe that Terrell Suggs deal is kind of a guide, or what Elvis Dumervil got last year, where the deals average a little over $5 million a year. Dumervil has upside in his deal based on 12 sacks, or it could escalate to $7 million a year. But he could benefit from there being a scarcity of pass rushers on the market, particularly once you play in a 3-4 system. Now that Worlds has signed his tender and Arakpo was franchised, that he could benefit there. And also, it's not a strong year in the draft for pass rushers as well. So he could be a little bit of a surprise with the deal he could get on the open market, provided he's released early.
All right, well, we're speaking with Joel Curry, and Joel is a columnist for National Football Post. He's also a CBS Sports contributor. He's a caps and contracts expert, and we're just tapping into his knowledge here and helping us kind of formulate what's going to happen in the offseason with our New York Jets. Now, we're going to go back to last year a little bit, Joel, and John Idzik, and one of his free agent signings was running back Mike Goodson. Now, pretty much since Goodson joined the Jets, it's kind of gone downhill for him. He's had a number of legal issues. He finally came back from suspension. He tore his ACL. And you know, it's kind of up in the air. Some fans think that Goodson flashed enough to maybe stay with the team. They do need that kind of scat back. The injury certainly hurts his abilities to maybe come back and be as quick as he was. I mean, what do you see moving forward for Mike Goodson potentially? Do you think it's just going to keep him, or, you know, the financially does it make sense to kind of move on to him, maybe look for a scat back in the draft?
Well, Mike Goodson's affordable. So I think it comes down to whether he's more trouble than he's worth, because his cap number is under $2 million. His salary's $1.65 million. So it's not like he's going to have some sort of huge implication on your cap. It just comes down to whether you want to put up with him and put up with what comes, the drama that comes with him being on the roster. I think it's more that than anything else. Obviously, there's the injury concern, but it's not like he's Chris Johnson where you're paying him $8 million and have a $10 million cap hit, so you can't wait to show him the door.
Yeah, so I guess that's kind of, you know, what we're hearing from Jet Nation is kind of both sides of the argument. You know, let him go, he's not worth it, or just keep him, he's not really costing you that much amount of money, and see what he's got left. I guess you could see him coming into training camp, and maybe if they don't like what they see, maybe he's released then. Just quickly about his injury, would it have to maybe be a release later on in the year because he had the injury? I think it was October. So if he's still in, the injury he sustained in October was still a problem for him moving forward, would that have an effect upon, you know, the Jets owing him some money after releasing him because he was injured during the season?
Well, it depends on whether he gets healthy, because there's something called injury protection in the collective bargaining agreement, where if you're released injured and you're still under contract, I forget the exact amount, but I think you get right around $1 million if you hit different requirements, and basically you have to not be able to play for the entire season. Most guys with a knee injury are going to be healthy enough to play at some point during the next season, so I don't know if it really apply to him. But if he did come back, if they released him and he did come back and play, he's probably looking at playing for his league minimum.
All right, well, we're going to get in a little bit with John Idzik, and last year was obviously his first year as general manager. He had an austere budget. You know, he had some constraints. The Jets were over the cap. He did what he had to do to put a competitive product on the field. But, you know, this is his first offseason where he has cap resources, and he can be aggressive in free agency if he chooses to be. And you know John Idzik from back in his Tampa Bay Buccaneers days. Now, we don't know how he's going to act during free agency, but given what you know about him, do you think that he's going to be setting the market out there early, you know, being aggressive in free agency, kind of like Jeff Ireland was last year with the Miami Dolphins, or do you see him kind of laying back and letting the market set itself and then going after guys that he desires?
My experience with John Idzik has been that he's very pragmatic. So unless there's a guy that he really wants and targets, he's probably not going to go out and try to set the market. But if there is that guy that he really covets or Rex really is pushing for, that may force him to be a little more aggressive. Last year, as you're right, he didn't have the cap room to do much of anything. But I jokingly say this, anything that has Seattle Seahawks or Arizona Cardinals attached to it, you might see them coming New York's way, because the tendency generally is that if there's someone that you're familiar with, those are really the people you go to first, because you've seen kind of Rex did that when he had a lot more power, like the Bart Scotts of the world and various people that he's familiar with have come up to New York, Ed Reed last year. So you could see him trying to target some Seahawks players, and also since Rod Graves, former Arizona GM, is basically his right-hand man, you could see some Cardinals them trying to make a play at some Arizona Cardinals as well.
Yeah, Rod Graves was the former general manager of the Arizona Cardinals, and now he's with the Jets organization. So, you know, I know Idzik and him are friendly, and, yeah, you could definitely see that. One last thing about Idzik is that, you know, it seemed like Tannenbaum just brought the player in, and the character concerns maybe went by the wayside. Do you think that John Idzik will put a bigger emphasis on the character of the player? It seems as if the reports we hear kind of suggest that.
Yeah, John does everything very thoroughly and does his due diligence. I know Goodson didn't necessarily fit that criteria last year, and then you can say the same thing about Garrard with the injuries. But he's going to be very deliberate in practically everything he does. So there's a guy that just got reinstated from a suspension, Brandon Browner. That's a guy that if you're going to go corner shopping, if Cromartie is released, I don't know if he's your guy, even though he's a big corner, just because of suspension issues, because he did test positive towards the end of the year for, I think, marijuana. So I don't know if that's a guy that he would really target, but big corners don't grow on trees.
So one of the hot topics in Jet Nation is Geno Smith in the quarterback position. You know, many, some fans think it's Geno's job to lose, while other fans want to bring in competition to really push Geno, possibly take his spot. What was your evaluation of Geno, and how do you think the Jets are going to handle the quarterback position this season?
Geno was wildly inconsistent last year. That there were times when he looked good, and there were times where he just looked like he shouldn't be playing at all. I know he kind of rebounded towards the end of the year, but I don't think he really did anything to convince anyone he's definitively the quarterback. So I'd imagine they're going to bring in some veteran to push him, that if he falters, he starts. Maybe it's an open competition where the deck is kind of slanted towards Geno. So maybe a guy like a Michael Vick doesn't necessarily want to come into a situation like New York unless it's a true open competition. And he's probably not going to want to take a pay cut from the $7.5 million he made last year. A more intriguing option who would be more comfortable with a short-term starter mentor role would be someone like Josh McCown, because he handled the demotion when Jay Cutler was healthy perfectly last year, even though he may have been or was arguably the hottest quarterback in the league at that time. And a guy like that, at a minimum, is going to want to be paid at the top of the backup quarterback market, which Matt Moore set the bar last year at $4 million a year. If you're going to pay him to be like a mentor, maybe part-time potential starter, then you're probably looking at exceeding the $4 million, maybe getting into the range that Matt Hasselbeck had in Tennessee, which was like $20 million over 3 years, so you're hitting like the $6 million per year range and maybe a two-year deal. Or maybe you're doing it $5 million plus some upside through escalators and incentives for someone like Josh McCown. But there's probably going to be some competition for him for other situations like that. Like, he may be looking at Tampa Bay as a possible situation where he's going to have to – where maybe he's evaluating which quarterback would I rather help or maybe unseat, Mike Glennon or Geno Smith.
I guess my question about Josh McCown, I mean, is age to me the question. Also, he was with a quarterback crew and a coach and surrounded by an all-star cast with, you know, Marshall and Alshon Jeffrey and Martellus Bennett. Do you think, I mean, just for the sake of Geno, would the Jets be better off maybe just, I think the market may be high for McCown, could they consider a guy like a Matt Castle maybe? And what would his price tag be? I guess I'm touring with like a Matt Castle or Mike Vick. I think Mike Vick may try to command too much. But do you think maybe a Matt Castle would be a better fit for the Jets?
Matt Castle wants to play. Matt Castle had a 2014 contract year, which he could void, where he was making 3.7. That's what he was supposed to make. He voided that, so he's looking to do better than that. So he's a guy that has been a starter and a Pro Bowler, so his temperament may be not quite as good as McCown's, who's been a journeyman backup guy for his whole career. So I think he may be better off with someone like that than Castle, who's probably going to look to go someplace where he can play.
And I guess to follow up on Dennis, do you think, like, Mike Vick's history with the instance he had, do you think that would scare off John Idzik, or do you think the ties to Marty Morningweg would need to give the Jets some consideration to make a serious pursuit at Vick?
Well, at some point you have to look at what a guy's done more recently than his worst transgression. And Vick, for the most part, has handled himself well since he's gotten out of prison. So I don't think that's going to be a major concern. He also said the right things and seemed to do the right things last year when he lost his job to Nick Foles by injury. He didn't make a big stink about, I should have my job back. He was very supportive of Foles. So those are the types of things you kind of look for in a veteran guy who's going to be in a backup role. But at the same time, he said he'd rather not go back there and be a backup. So that would make me a little cautious about his mindset coming in, that he's looking to out-duel Geno Smith. And if Geno Smith was one of these kids that idolized Michael Vick, then I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing you want for Geno Smith, where he could be a little starstruck by his competition.
All right, Joel, we're gonna move on from the offense. We're going to go to the defense now. And the Jets ranked 22nd against the pass last year, and one of the reasons was definitely due to the safety play. And right now there's two guys, the Bills' Jarius Byrd and the Browns' T.J. Ward. They're set to hit free agency if they can't work out a deal before the 11th. And while an upgrade at the position would certainly be great, obviously these guys are big-time free agents. And, you know, could you kind of lay out what type of contracts they'd be looking for, guaranteed money, and maybe first two or three years, what you'd be looking at? One of the things I always try to stress to people is that early on you might get a little bit of a cap break. You use a signing bonus, like a Mike Wallace counted very little on the Miami Dolphins salary cap this past season, but he's counting $17 million this year. So maybe just lay out the contracts and the kind of the way they would work and maybe how John Edzik would structure it and why you might want to carry over some money the next year if he did sign a big-time free agent to handle that cap hit.
Well, if you're trying to get in the Jarius Byrd sweepstakes, you better be prepared to make him practically the highest paid safety in football. He reportedly, by AP, turned down a deal which had $30 million over the first 3 years. I would find that very surprising. There have been some conflicting reports on whether he actually got that offer and turned it down. But $30 million over 3 years would make him the highest paid safety. Right now, that honor belongs to Troy Polamalu on a 3-year extension he did a couple of years ago. He's earning the last year of it, which is basically 29 over 3. No other deal is close to that. I don't count Eric Berry's deal, which averages 8.3, because that's a rookie deal, and that was done under the old system. So that's a whole different phenomenon. I'm just looking at veteran deals. Then the other most recent benchmark is Deshaun Golson last year. To leave San Francisco to go to Tampa Bay. He got a deal averaging $8.25 million over the 5 years with $22 million in guarantees and $26 million over the first 3 years. So you're probably looking at a deal averaging over $9 million a year, over $25 million in guarantees, and it may get close to that $30 million number, which I find it hard to believe that Byrd turned down from Buffalo. Now, if you're talking about T.J. Ward, he's a strong safety, and free safeties are making a little bit more for the most part than strong safeties. There are two recent benchmarks. Cam Chancellor last year did a deal averaging $7 million a year, and so did Rashad Jones from Miami, averaging $7 million a year. The guarantees weren't quite at the level of Golson, didn't hit $20 million, more like in the high teens. So he's going to look to advance that bar, maybe try to go to the $8 million per year mark and $20 million in guarantees. So if you're talking about those two safeties, you're going to be looking at making them among the highest paid at the position.
All right, we're just going to shift gears real quick. I got a follow-up on Twitter here. People are just hitting me up on this, and maybe we get your input on it. Mark Sanchez, you know, he's going to be cut. I've heard some rumors that maybe he'd stay. I don't think so. But is there any sort of time frame that you look at him being cut, anything advantageous for the Jets to cut him, or is it just got to be before that March 25th roster bonus of $2 million that he's due? It doesn't really matter as far as the Jets are concerned.
Well, that's the drop-dead date, because if you don't, you're not going to pay him $2 million and cut him afterwards. So decision is going to be made by March 25th, whether he's gone or not. The thing is, I don't think you can bring him back because there's too much history, too much baggage. I don't see how that goes over with the fans. Because the first time, say you brought him back, first time he gets in and performs like the Mark Sanchez of the 2012 season, there's going to be a cascade of boos. And then that was a guy that his mindset last year was, I'm the starter. Only reason Geno is starting is because of injury. You really want that dynamic on the team? So he has to be a goner in my mind. I know Rex is one of his biggest champions, but there just needs to be a clean break all the way around for Mark Sanchez.
I agree with you there, Joel. The Jets are obviously going to be the market for wide receivers as they're in desperate need to upgrade the position. I mean, as of now, they're being linked to guys like Emmanuel Sanders, and obviously there's ties with Golden Tate, you know, as John Indyk has Seattle roots. Where do you see the Jets heading with the wide receiver position?
Well, they could get a gift at number 18 in the draft. Say Marquise Lee is available at 18. I think you have to grab him, because I used to jokingly say a couple of years ago that Mark Sanchez was jealous of Matt Barkley's receivers because he was throwing to Robert Woods and Marquise Lee. I know Lee was injured last year, didn't have the same year like he did in 2012 when he won the Biletnikoff Award. So I think that's one way you can attack the receiver position. One guy I want to dispel any chance of him becoming a New York Jet is Doug Baldwin. He's a restricted free agent. He was undrafted, which means he could get a first-round tender of $3.113 million, or most likely a second-round tender of $2.187 million. And once he gets one of those two tenders, you can basically kiss him off the Jets' list for being a receiver option. Golden Tate is probably going to be one of your more expensive receivers in the market, nowhere near the money Eric Decker thinks he's going to get. But he's already come out and said that Riley Cooper deal, which is a max of $25 million over 5 years with a base value of $22.5 over 5 years, isn't relevant to my situation. To me, that means he's looking at a floor of Robert Meacham in San Diego a couple of years ago, which was basically 25.5 over 4. So you're talking around the 6.5 per year range, and he's probably looking for over $15 million in guarantees or more depending upon the length of the deal. So that's probably just to get in the game for him, because in Seattle, he's got a ceiling in terms of what they can pay him because of Percy Harvin's $67 million deal over 6 years. So they're only going to pay so much for a number two receiver, and we know they won't go to $8 million because they got rid of Sidney Rice, who was going to make $8.5 million this year. That could be another option when he's healthy, because he'd want to come in on a one-year prove-it deal. He hasn't really done much in Seattle, and he should send Brett Favre a huge thank-you card or gift for getting him the contract to begin with. Then there are guys like Emmanuel Sanders that will probably be on New England's radar as well, since they made an offer sheet, actually signed him to an offer sheet last year that Pittsburgh matched. I would imagine that he's going to be looking for something in the Brian Hartline range, which would put him over $6 million a year of close to $15 million in guarantees.
So based on those numbers, which seem kind of high for the player, do you see John Idzik maybe shying away from like a bidding war for a Golden Tate and Emmanuel Sanders and trying to pursue a guy like, say, like you said, a Sidney Rice, or maybe, say, a Miles Austin if he gets released, or a Kenny Britt? Did you see the Jets going in that direction instead of maybe trying to get more bang for the buck with show-me deals than, you know, spending the big dollars on a guy like Golden Tate?
Well, if you're talking about character concerns, you can scratch Kenny Britt off the list. I know he's from the area, but that guy's had enough legal problems that may scare John Idzik away. He should be as cheap as they come, because he thinks he's going to be a number one receiver someplace, so he's going to price himself out of the market with that attitude. He's going to be sitting there for a long time unless he readjusts expectations, and he can be a very low-risk, cheap option where if he's more trouble than he's worth, it'll cost you nothing to get rid of him. Miles Austin is an intriguing one. He's going to be most likely a June 1 cap casualty in Dallas. Hopefully they'll give him the June 1 designation so he gets out on the market sooner rather than later. He's scheduled to make $5.5 million this year, which if he can ever stay healthy and the hamstrings aren't bothering him, that's a fine salary for him. So if I'm going to sign a guy like him, I wouldn't be opposed to going to the 5-5, considering Jeremy Maclin, who didn't play last year, has come back off of an ACL, has a deal which will pay him a max of 6, and only 500 is really in incentives And he's got these per-game roster bonuses as well. So I would want to put a significant amount of money in Miles Austin for per-game roster bonuses if I'm going to do a one-year deal with him.
One of the interesting names that's been kind of like circulating in the Philadelphia market is DeSean Jackson. I mean, the Eagles re-signed Riley Cooper. They had Jeremy Maclin in the fold. And there's some rumblings that the Eagles, they're not going to actively shop DeSean Jackson, but he has contract demands. He wants an extension. He wants guaranteed money. Do you think the Jets would even take a flyer on DeSean Jackson, maybe inquire like what the Eagles want for him?
John Idzik would be crazy to go after DeSean Jackson. Does anyone remember how he performed in his contract year with that lack of effort? I'm not going to put myself in harm's way. I'm going to play. If you thought Jadeveon Clowney was trying to protect himself this past year at South Carolina, he's got nothing on DeSean Jackson. Plus, the guy is already unhappy with his contract, which has a little over $30 million left for 3 years, and the market hasn't materially changed since he signed the deal. I wouldn't want to come anywhere near that situation for all those reasons.
All right, Joel, we're going to get into another need of the Jets here, and it's actually taken kind of a twist lately. They need help at tight end, and you know Dennis Pitta just signed a four-year deal, $32 million with $16 million in guarantees, and it's kind of set the market before the market's even begun. Now, if the Jets are going to go after kind of what's left there on the free agent market for tight end, like a Brandon Pettigrew or a Scott Chandler or maybe even Jermichael Finley, I mean, does this Pitta deal sort of set – like a benchmark for what they'll be looking for, the $6 million per for these guys? I mean, they've got, and some of them, I know Finley's got a little bit of an injury concern, but some of the numbers are very similar to Pitta. I know Pitta had an injury last year. So, I mean, is this kind of a set thing now? Are these guys going to be looking for this type of money?
I thought Pitta came in a little bit low. I was thinking he would try to surpass Jared Cook at the $7 million per year mark with $19 million guaranteed. The one thing Pitta had going against him is he's an older guy. He went on a Mormon mission at BYU, so he's actually 29 right now. So between that and the injury, that may have pushed the deal down a little bit. You're probably top guy on the market. If you're okay with the neck, would be Jermichael Finley. I would be reluctant to sign him unless I got total clearance from the doctors, and that would be one of those things where I'd bring him in and let the doctors decide what to do with him. And I would obviously want a waiver, an injury waiver on the neck, and would want those per game roster bonuses, which he should be used to, because that's the staple of Green Bay contracts. Pettigrew would be your safer option. He's not quite as good as Jermichael Finley. He's probably going to look for Pitta money, and someone may give it to him. Detroit really needs him back because they don't have a ton of offensive weapons. Another guy to keep your eye on is John Carlson, who will be released from Minnesota. He signed a $25 million five-year deal, and he's been hurt, so he's going to be available. But the guy I would really be on the lookout for is Zach Miller. That guy is a very good blocking tight end who also has pass catching ability. He's got a $7 million cap number in Seattle, $6 million salary, $1 million roster bonus, which is payable on the 10th day of the league year, March 20th. For what he does there and isn't really a part of their offense, where he's only catching like 30 balls for 500 yards, he's a little overpriced. So he could be a potential cap casualty. If he hits the market, that's the guy I'd want.
So one of the teams that seems to be making headlines on a daily basis is the Dallas Cowboys and their salary cap situation. And that salary cap situation could result in DeMarcus Ware possibly being released. I guess I got two questions. Is, A, do you think he'd be released? And, B, what kind of contract would he command in the open market?
Well, he's already said he doesn't want to take a pay cut, that he's willing to restructure. And he's kind of bailed out by the cap going up almost $7 million more than the original projections, because it was originally thought to be at $126.3 million. So Dallas doesn't have to make as many moves as they thought they were going to have to make. He's an older pass rusher who battled injuries last year, had the worst year of his career. The thing is, if you're an older pass rusher, you better be careful how you price yourself, because the only pass rusher over 30 that has a deal averaging more than $10 million per year, and it may not be for long, is Julius Peppers. Next in line is Robert Mathis. He got a deal for $36 million over 4 years as a franchise player a couple of years ago, and he's not showing any signs of slowing down. So if I'm Ware, I take the pay cut down to the $7 million for just 2014, slash almost $5.5 million off of my base salary, keep my other years intact, and if I have a rebound year, then maybe I can get my salary there. But if he's unwilling to play the pay cut game, he's probably going to be looking at Robert Mathis money and will be hard-pressed to get it on the open market and may have to adjust his expectations lower and could end up in that Suggs range if he's not careful at about $5 million a year.
All right, well, we've been speaking with Joel Curry here. He is a writer for National Football Post, also a CBS Sports contributor, was a former sports agent. We're going to kind of wrap up with the last question here. It's one of my favorite subjects, and I've been fortunate enough to have a few conversations about this with Joel. And it's one of my favorites, like I said, Darrelle Revis. Now, there was this rumor floating around from the Buccaneers. I mean, who knows where it came from? It was kind of all over the board. They were thinking of trading him, not trading him. I know they have Licht, the guy, the new GM there from Arizona, John Licht, and he took over from Mark Dominic, and he kind of inherited this big contract from the Revis deal. But here's what I wanted to get your impressions of, Joel, which is, do you think that maybe some of this leakage of the rumored trade has come from Darrelle Revis's camp trying to get guaranteed money? As most people know, there's no guaranteed money in Darrelle Revis's contract moving forward. He is 29. You know, he was always big about the guaranteed money. Or do you think that the Buccaneers are really trying to move him, or you just think that this is just speculation on somebody's part?
I think it's a little all of the above.
Okay.
Because Lovie Smith went out of his way to mention Revis at the press conference and how he wanted to use him. He didn't have to do that. At the same time, the big problem is whatever oral conversations that were had with Mark Dominic, all bets are off of a new regime. And the fact that Revis took that deal with that structure led me to believe that he'd gotten some assurances that Tampa Bay was going to exercise the right they have to convert portions of his base salary into the roster bonus and fully guarantee the roster bonus, because they fully guarantee the roster bonus if they rework the deal. Then it's treated like signing bonus under the cap, but it has to be fully guaranteed at the time they do that. If it's conditionally guaranteed, then it's just treated like it is now. I think that's what Revis was alluding to when he said there at his press conference, there are a couple of things in my contract you guys don't know about. I think that's what he was alluding to. And if they're not going to do something where they guarantee some portion of 2014 and 15, they're going to have a problem on their hands if he makes it past the third day of the league year, which is when his $1.5 million roster bonus is due and the draft pick compensation goes from a fourth-round pick to a third-round pick. So they may have just inherited all the troubles the Jets had with Revis contractually, where he's going to be a headache for them if he makes it past the third day of the league year.
Which all Jeff fans are hoping and praying will happen. Well, I'm just going to throw this to Tyson quick, so we're going to wrap up here, and he wants to just say his goodbyes to Joel. So, Tyson?
Joel, thank you so much for taking your time. I mean, you share some incredible information on contracts and salary caps. I mean, I love reading all your information. It's especially this time of year, it's invaluable. Can you give all our listeners your Twitter ID and how they can get a hold of you?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter. It's Corey Joel, last name first and my first name, because someone has it as my first name and my last name, which surprised me. That's Corryjoel. I write a weekly column for National Football Post, and also I'm writing weekly for CBSSports.com, and that's usually titled An Agent's Take, since that was my profession for over 15 years.
Yeah, and just so everybody knows, Joel is very interactive on Twitter. He will answer your questions as best he can. I know sometimes answering a complex question on Twitter is trying to write the Constitution on a postage stamp, but Joel does an excellent job of explaining in layman's terms, you know, what's going on with the salary cap, what's going on with a particular issue that you're concerned about. He'll answer your questions. He's very interactive. He's a terrific follow, and his articles are very informative and very easy to understand, really gives you a blueprint of what's going to happen with teams in the NFL and your team in general. So I want to thank you, Joel, again, just like Tyson, for coming on Jet Nation Radio tonight, giving us your insight. It was fantastic, and we really are looking forward to next week when free agency kicks off. It's going to be very exciting as our New York Jets have some resources to work with.
Well, I really appreciate you guys having me on, and I really enjoyed the time.
All right, Joel, always a pleasure. Take care now.
All right, take care.
Bye now. All right, well, that was our good friend Joel Curry. And like I said, I mean, if you're on Twitter, please follow Joel on Twitter. He is an excellent follow, and you just gain so much information. I mean, Tyson, where do we begin? I mean, we have a couple callers on the line. We're going to get to you in a minute. But, Tyson, what just an excellent explanation of how things work. He lays out all the key players here. You know, in every aspect of positions, from what's going on in the Jet hierarchy with John Idzik to Jet free agents, and it just really was fantastic to get his perspective.
No, yeah, no doubt, Dennis. I mean, Joel does a great job of being objective, you know, giving it, you know, he's not biased towards any team. He just gives you facts and numbers. I mean, he just tells it like it is, and you can form your own opinion based off of that. I mean, if you value a certain player, like Jarris Bird, do you want to make him the highest paid safety in the NFL? I mean, you know, it was an incredible amount of information. And I think interesting takes on the quarterback position as well with Geno Smith. So, I mean, I really enjoy listening to him. I always enjoy reading his information. You're not going to find better info on the salary cap and contracts.
Yeah, like I said, it was just wonderful. And, you know, it's something where you maybe want to listen to it more than once. I know I'm going to, because there was just so much information in there. I'm going to be taking notes and maybe putting some of his quotes up on some articles on JetNation.com. But why don't we jump on the phones right now? We've had a few people holding on. And we do have a good friend of ours. It's Jude from North Carolina, so I'm going to bring him on. So good evening, Jude. Dennis and Tyson here. What did you think of Joel Curry and what he had to say?
I thought it was a very informative. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. I thought it was a very informative phone call and everything. I was like, wow. One thing I'm trying to find the right words. One thing I really liked was when he was talking about the whole Michael Vick thing and how if he comes here, if Gino was one of those people who idolized him and everything, that might make for an interesting dynamic. I never really thought of that. Besides that, he had a lot of really good information. I just followed him on Twitter, so... Yes.
You know, dude, you know, and the thing is, I found that interesting, too. Like, we always assume so many things about players. You know, this is an NFL player. They're not going to get starstruck. But that was an interesting dynamic. I mean, Geno could have looked up to Vic, same style quarterback, you know, had a little chip on his shoulder. And it's a great point. I mean, it's just, it makes you wonder about a lot of things. Like we joke around on Twitter saying, you know, we don't play in a vacuum. We don't shop in a vacuum. But things like this, but there's things like this that we don't even think about. I mean, do the Jets, you know, Geno could get starstruck. Or, you know, the Jets could shy away from a Kenny Britt or things like that just because off the field issues. So I thought it was very interesting. Is there any other players that you were surprised that he talked about, like any like numbers or stats that he gave you?
One thing was probably, I listened to more to the end of the call, so one thing was DeMarcus Ware as well. I figured that once he got out to free agency, all the teams would be lining up, signing him however much he wants, but he made a good point that I didn't consider the fact that he's getting up there in age, and so his value may be less than what one would think. So that was another thing I found interesting.
I mean, Jude, I guess the one thing that, you know, we've talked about, I mean, it seems like once every player becomes available, everybody on Jeff's Twitter is like, sign him now, get him now. And the biggest name is Jarris Bird. And now, based on what Joel said, is that he's going to look to be the highest paid safety in the NFL. So as a Jet fan, as a guy that wants to upgrade the safety position, are you willing to make Jarris Bird the highest paid safety in the NFL?
That's a very good question. Hard to say, really. I mean, I personally would be risk-averse to doing that because I'm not a big spender of money, so I can't imagine making someone that highly paid. But I'm not John Idzik. He might just be overcome with what Jarris Bird can do. I would personally, if I can't, I wouldn't want to get into a bidding war with other teams for Jarris Bird, so I would go after some other safeties that may be coming out that are a bit more under the radar, so to speak. We don't have to have the name, so to speak. We just have to have the talent. And I think, I mean, I get caught in it sometimes as well, but I think sometimes a lot of people get caught up in the name and not the talent of the person, so to speak. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, Junior. Yeah, I got you. You know, here's what I was going to throw a thing to you that he said about Zach Miller from Seattle. And, what I was saying to myself is, how about Zach Miller and, like, a rookie, you know, kind of sharing the load? And I was discussing this with Ron Pickett today, actually. I spoke to him on the phone a little bit about, you know, the Jets are kind of in a quandary with a tight end. Do you just run out there and throw money at a tight end because we need a tight end, so here we go, and you regret it later? I mean, you know, Joel had described John Idzik, and it's kind of fallen into place so far, we've seen, as a patient guy. Patient guy. Not a guy who's going to panic and make panic moves. So if you were to see, like, Zach Miller come to the Jets and a rookie and Cumberland kind of rotate the three guys and get the production out of the three rather than paying one guy a boatload of money, I mean, could you see that happening for this season?
Oh, that would be great. I mean, that would be the most optimal use of our resources. So, yes, I personally would not mind something like that happening.
Yeah, that would actually be an avenue that I think that they could definitely look to go down. And I hadn't heard that name, and that was something new, so I definitely jotted that down. And you know what? That has some possibility because Idzik has the roots there in Seattle. Is there anything else you wanted to touch on, Jude, that maybe Joel hit on that you were surprised by or found interesting?
I can't really think off the top of my head right now. Actually, there was one thing that sort of like, on
okay.
a tangent, but not that much. I was just wondering if on the free agency, should we heavily pursue defense or should we heavily pursue offense? I know someone on Twitter asked that question. I think it was Big Sandy X or something. So I was wondering if we should pursue defense or offense more in free agency. What do you both think?
I think it comes down to value, Jude. Yeah, I'm sorry, Dennis. I think it comes down to value, Jude. You're gonna put numbers on guys, and once that guy prices himself out of range, then you look at something else. Then you can say, hey, you know what, maybe, you know, if Calvin Pace wants too much money or all the safeties price themselves out of the market, then you're like, all right, you know what, we're not going to go safety in free agency. We're going to address it in the draft. I think, Dennis, I'll throw it to you, but it's kind of like you're going to play like you have a board in the draft. You have a board in free agency, and you make your play. If you don't get it, then you use the draft to address it. So, I mean, I think that's how they're probably going to handle it.
I think that what they should do is they should just get the players that they feel are worth the money and fit the need and fit the system. That's what I think. I don't care whether they're offense, defense, or special teams, or they sit in the stands and sell hot dogs. I don't care what they are. As long as they're not round pegs and square holes. Again, don't buy shoes that look nice but don't fit. I'd rather have ugly shoes that are comfortable and fit and do their job. So that's what I think the most important thing is. And also with John Idzik, again, just like Joel said, I agree with him. I don't think John Idzik is going to jump out of the gate. You know, they can start negotiating on the 8th of March with any free agent's agent representation, let's say. And they can have a deal in place before free agency even starts. You know, as soon as it starts, boom, they sign the deal. That's what happened last year with the Miami Dolphins. I do not see John Idzik operating in that manner. But, Drew, listen, we're going to wrap up with you. Appreciate the phone call, as always. And you know what? I really liked what Joel had to say, and I'm going to have to listen back a couple times to pick up every little nuance. But he is a fountain of information that you're not going to get from anybody else. But before we let you go, Jude, Tyson has one more thing to ask you.
Well, no, I guess this is a question for both of you guys. I mean, one of the names that was cut today was Jason Avant, a wide receiver from the Eagles, who's known to be a leader, a reliable guy, you know, just, he seems like, he's almost like a Jericho Copcher used to be for the Jets. But I guess my question for you, Jude, is, Is this the kind of guy that you want to pursue? I mean, we're all going to look at the big names like Golden Tate, Emmanuel Sanders. And for me, it's like I look at if the guy, the guy is available, is he better than Clyde Gates and Stephen Hill? If the answer is yes, I want to pursue him, though. So, I mean, would you consider, I guess we'll go with Jude first, would you consider a guy like Jason Avant?
Yes, I would consider signing Jason Avant, and you said it better than I could. I mean, if you looked at our wide receiver core last year, looked at the first Patriots game, looked at the Saints game, and you say, oh, I mean, everyone out there, pretty much 80-85% of the people out there on free agency are probably better than the people we had during those two games. So, yes, I would sign Jason Avant. He's a solid player and everything. He would give us the depth we need. And I just have one thing to say about that. We were playing with super soakers while the other guys had automatic machine guns when it came to wide receiver stuff. So I think that we should pretty much, if they're not Clyde Gates or Stephen Hill, we should at least give them a look. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, you know what? I wrote an article about Jerome Simpson. I took a lot of heat from it because I know he's had a little off the field issues. But mm-hmm. I'm just saying, look, if the guy can keep his nose clean, if he can, he'll come at a cheap price because he can put some production up for you. Now, what I was saying is that they might look at some top tier guys. Maybe they do sign Emmanuel Sanders. I don't know, but they might want to have. We talked about Miles Austin again. If he can stay healthy, maybe a lower risk, high reward kind of deal. Jerome Simpson. You might need to bring in two free agents, like an A free agent and a B/C free agent at wide receiver. And you know what? Look, if they don't have guaranteed money, they come into camp, they don't work out. Maybe you draft some receivers in the draft, and they're beating them out. Goodbye. Away you go. So, you know what? You have a 90-man roster. You might as well use it all, and you've got some resources. So I think the Jets are going to have A, B, and C options, especially at receiver. Not so much at tight end. I really don't see as many options at tight end, and this is why I'm very concerned about tight end. And I was speaking to Ron Pickett about this. I mean, a guy like Scott Chandler right now, I mean, he's looking at maybe a four-year deal for like $25 million with the $10 million guaranteed, and I'm probably lowballing him by the numbers that Joel gave me. Maybe more than that. Maybe 30 with $15 million guaranteed. Scott Chandler, who I think is a very serviceable tight end, a nice tight end, but you know, isn't exactly Vernon Davis setting the world on fire. But you know what? When players hit the open market, that's what sets their value. So, you know, the Jets have a little bit of work to do, especially at the tight end position, I think a little bit more than wide receiver. But, Jude, we always appreciate you calling in to Jet Nation Radio. You're a big supporter, and I'm glad that you got a lot out of Joel's interview because, you know, Tyson and I know we certainly did.
Thank you very much. You both have a great night now.
Okay, you too, Jude. Take care. Bye. Bye. All right, that was our friend Jude. And you know what, folks? Like we always say, this is an interactive show. And if you want to get in on a conversation, and maybe you're a little shy, just go on Twitter. It's at Jet Nation Radio. You know, you can talk it up with other Jet fans, no problem. But if you want to talk to Tyson and myself, probably Tyson more than me, I can't say I blame you. The number is 646-716-4697. Hit one when prompted. Our switchboard operator, Steve, is eagerly awaiting your call. And you can talk about what Joel had to say, the upcoming free agency, who you like, whatever you feel like talking about, the phone lines are open. So, Tyson, I heard a rumor that you have a question for me.
Yes, I do, Ben. And I just want to apologize for the callers that were on hold, too. We had an opportunity with Joel. We just wanted to get as much information as we could out of him because it's so valuable, and it's a lot of information we can't get anywhere else. Dennis, my question for you is this. Slowly but surely, a lot of free agents are coming off the market. Anquan Boldin, mm-hmm. Jeremy Maclin. All these guys are coming off slowly but surely, which we both predicted was going to happen. The concern I have, and this is something that I'm kind of curious what your take is, the Jets, for certain guys like Emmanuel Sanders or, you know, Golden Tate, they're going to be competing against teams like the Raiders, the Browns, that have significant cap space. I mean, the Raiders have close to $60 million. Are you worried?
So the Jaguars.
Or yeah, another one. I mean, there's teams. Are you worried that the Jets are going to get into bidding wars with teams that they may be forced to overpay? Or do you think that John is going to say, you know what, we have our mark. This is our ceiling. We're going to $30 million. If this team wants to be dumb enough to spend $36 million, we're not going to go that high. Or are they going to go that level and say, no, we desperately need this player, we're going to go that high? I mean, are you concerned about the other teams with their cap space and getting into bidding wars?
No, I'm not concerned about that at all because look at the – I mean, look at the teams that have had success. Have they really – have they built through free agency? Have they gone out – I mean, maybe some teams have gone out and got a free agent here or there, but the teams that have success year after year for the most part. I mean, who was the most active team in free agency last year? The Miami Dolphins. They fell apart at the end of the year, and they fell apart completely. The Philadelphia Eagles, who years had the dream team. So, no, I think the good teams have a budget, stick by it, and say, you know what, we don't want to regret this later, and we'll find alternatives. And that's what I think the good teams do. And I think that, but look, the Jets are going to be up against competition as far as players go. But Emmanuel Sanders, how many teams like Emmanuel Sanders? How many players does he fit their system? Do they need him? And then the teams that are in there, you know what? Look, if you're close and you think you sweeten the pot a little bit, sure. If you say there's no way I'm going to pay this money, then you look to Plan B. And I do think for the most part, except for tight end, like I said, Plan B is out there. But Tyson, I want to bring a caller on. It's Mike from Port Jeff. He wants to talk a little bit about the draft. We're going to maybe try to mix in a little bit of free agency too. So, Mike, thanks for hanging in there. I know you were hanging in there earlier. We're doing great. What do you got for us on the linebackers in the draft? And also, did you like Joel Curry? Isn't Joel great?
I don't know how he does it. My head was spinning with all those numbers and everything else. I don't know how he does it. But like I said, when I speak to you, you do the same thing. It's like spinning around. It's like, okay, I lose count when I'm trying to count on my toes and fingers. But the reason I wanted to call was I wanted to see what your take on the linebackers. I guess I'll expand it not just in the draft, but also free agent-wise because we have DeMario Davis, who obviously runs around like a lunatic, and he's a ball. But we know that we need to with Harris. He's getting long in the tooth there, and we need to improve on that side. And I love David Harris. Don't get me wrong. All right, he was wonderful from the day we got him from Michigan. But we need to start improving on that and get a little bit younger. So what are our options? I know we're talking about Dee Ford, talking about Prishambo, talking about C.J. Mosley from Alabama for the draft. But what about free agency? Where is there anybody out there that could that would look good in a 3-4 scheme?
Well, and it's a good question, Mike, and this is something that we talked about with Joel. And one of the questions that I wanted to ask somebody is, what is the status of Antoine Barnes? I mean, Antoine Barnes has speed. He was explosive. He started to make plays before his injury. He started to become like a forgotten player, Dennis. I mean, don't you think I like the way he was playing, but then it's like, what happened to him? Is he coming back? And if so, I think he makes a good impact. And does that kind of push Calvin Pace out? I mean, Dennis, what do you think?
No, I agree. It gives a little depth. And also the other thing is that, look, I mean, was Jason Worlds and Brian Arakpo realistic? Maybe. I mean, maybe the Jets would have made a run at them, but forget about them now. I mean, who else is out there? I'm looking at some names here. No one else jumps off the page of me as far as free agency. You know what, Mike? Maybe I think you touched on Twitter, a guy like Dee Ford. What about a guy, I was talking to Ron Pickett, Kyle Van Noy. Right, a guy at a BYU. The guy's got good coverage skills. He had 13.5 sacks a couple of years ago. I mean, he might be a guy you could have in the second round. Again, with some of these signings now, and look, here's something I want to bring up that's very important before I forget. We spoke to Mike Tannenbaum a while ago, Tyson. You'll remember this. And we were saying, well, there's a lot of veteran guys still out there. It was later in the year, and we're surprised. And what Mike Tannenbaum said was a lot of the salary cap space now is being saved to retain players that were already on the team. And I think this is an important factor moving forward for the Jets. A guy like Austin Howard, the Jets developed this guy. They gave him the 2 years as a starter. The Jets developed him, not somebody else. Why let him walk off the free – why did you save all this money? So you can let a guy that you develop walk off the free agency? No. Mm-hmm. Bring in guys, develop them, and have the money to keep them if you want to, if you so decide to. Otherwise, recycle them in the draft. I don't personally, Michael, I don't see anybody in – free agency that I say, yeah, I want him on this team that's anything more than just a guy. But in the draft,
from BYU is an intriguing guy. He's a little bit older. He actually did his missionary work and everything else. And he's a sure tackler. The only thing I wonder if he would be good when it comes to dropping in the pass coverage because he didn't.
He
is
good.
Well
he was a tight end, Michael. I think he was a tight end or like a fullback or something. I'm going by Ron Pickett. Ron told me he's very good in coverage. I think he had like 7 pass defenses and an interception last year. So apparently he does have some skills in that area. And here's the thing. As far as David Harris goes, I think he's on the lesser part of his contract. You let him play at his contract. Maybe go in the later rounds. Get yourself a developmental guy. While David Harris is still there, see if you can develop him. And you know what? When 2015 free agency shows up, you go from there as far as David Harris.
Well, look where we got Davis from. Look where he came from. You know, like I said, nobody ever heard of him before, and like I said, and all of a sudden we were able to pick him up, and look at the player he is today. So I see it that way, but because the linebacker is one of the issues I see us needing to just get younger with. So, but hopefully then we can get that side taking care of the ball, because I know most of it's going to be looking at offense. I know Tyson has said, well, it should be the best player and everything else, but like I said, later rounds, I definitely think we're going to need to look at the linebacker and the secondary.
All right, Michael. Well, listen, we got another call on the line. We're starting to run a little short on time. We do appreciate you calling in. I know you were holding on hold there, and you had to drop off for a second. We appreciate your input. I've heard a lot of the things that you've said have come through a lot of different ways, whether it's Twitter, emails, and you definitely hit on some great points. In fact, our friends, Ciro and Carlos now from CNC Football Factory, were discussing this particular issue about the linebackers. I got to go on the Green and White show with our friend Joseph Haas and Amari Tully, and you know what, talk about some of these things. And you know what, it is a hot issue, and you bring up some great points, and we'll see. I think the Jets are going to look to the draft to replace these older guys as they move out. Michael, always
great
a pleasure.
Great job as always, guys. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. All right, we're going to move on to our next caller. He's been holding on a second. It's our friend Neil from Jersey, and he wants to discuss free agency. So, Neil, Dennis and Tyson here at Jet Nation Radio. We're really glad to have you aboard. What do you got for us on our New York Jets?
Yeah, this is going to be an exciting season for our Jets. We're in good, like, situation cap-wise. Like, we were cash-strapped the whole time with Tannenbaum. He made some really bad decisions. But right now, we're set up to do some damage. So I'm really excited for this agency period. And this guy, Jarris Byrd, I'm on the bandwagon. I already know what he can do. We play him twice a year. I've seen him pick off Mark Sanchez, Geno. I don't know how any Jet fan could not want this guy, regardless of whether he wants top safety money, which is not a lot compared to what Revis was demanding. We need to be on board with this. This guy's legit.
Neil, I guess my question for you, this is Tyson. I mean, I think to compare with Revis is kind of a little bit like apples and oranges, because Revis is just, and he was in a whole different ballpark in terms of his contract demands. But I mean, I agree with you with John Idzik. I mean, last year he made no-brainer moves. I mean, his hands were tied. This year he has the ability to basically do whatever he wants. He's going to put his footprint on this team. I guess my question for you, I have twofold, is: Are you concerned about getting into bidding wars with other teams that have significant cap space? I mean, last year we were tied, but this year, if he wants to break the bank for a Jarris Byrd, he can do that. Are you concerned about getting into a bidding war and actually overpaying for a player like Byrd?
You know what? I know a lot of teams have a lot more cap room than we do. Like, I heard you guys saying the Raiders have like 50, 60 million. I don't think a guy like Jarris Byrd would want to play for a team like that. He's been on the Bills for, what, 5-6 years? He's not going to Jacksonville or Oakland. I'm telling you, John Idzik, he has an effect on players. I think he'll know how to smooth talk Jarris Byrd and Rex Ryan. This guy will want to play for us, I'm telling you. I'm not even concerned about teams with more cap room.
No, and I agree with you. I think for a guy like Byrd, the Jets' best card could be Rex Ryan with his sales pitch, with his defense. I mean, I always get concerned when a player says it's not about the money, it's usually about the money. But I guess my other question for you is, other than the safety position, where do you think the Jets are going to go with receiver? I mean, we heard Sanders, we've heard Tate, we've heard Chance on the team, Knicks. Who are some of the guys you're looking at, and what kind of money are you looking to give them?
In free agency, I like Emmanuel Sanders. Roethlisberger had a lot of legit young, fast receivers in Pittsburgh. He had Wallace, Antonio Brown, Emmanuel Sanders. Those guys are all those scatty-type, shifty wide receivers. I like Emmanuel Sanders as far as free agency. And in the draft, I was on the Mike Evans train, but I think his 40 time put him in top 10, maybe even top 15. I think he'll be gone. I'm a Marquise Lee guy myself.
Okay, and I guess with free agency, if would you be willing to pay a significant amount of money for Sanders, or would you be willing to consider guys like a Jason Avant or like a Miles Austin, like Joel Corey talked about? Who, you know, he's proven some things in the NFL, you know, an injury, he had a hamstring problem, things like that. Would you be willing to go, you know, go after Sanders and spend what you got, or maybe take a different route and go with like a Jason Avant and a Miles Austin?
Well, I think Jason Avant's a little older, if I'm not mistaken, but we need to get younger. We're already a young team. We need to stay that way. I think Emmanuel Sanders would be pretty cheap. He hasn't. He's not really a stats guy. I mean, I think he had like 800, 900 yards last year. He'll be pretty cheap as far as the money is concerned. He'll be a good number two receiver. We can get a number one guy in the draft. I don't think any of these guys that are left are really expensive when it comes to – maybe with the exception of Eric Decker, I don't think any of these guys will really damage our cap money like that much.
Well, Neil, I mean, I'm going to go by what Joel gave us as far as what he thought that would a Sanders would require, which is a Brian Hartline kind of deal. I actually wrote an article on JetNation.com laying out a mock contract that was a little bit higher than what Joel laid out. And Brian Hartline got about $31 million with 12.5 guaranteed. He got a five-year deal. That's what Brian Hartline got from the Miami Dolphins. Now, I personally think that Sanders is going to get about a 30. I'm going to round it up a little bit. I think it's a hair too high. $40 million over 5 years, $15 million guaranteed. My mock draft had like $38 million with about $14 million guaranteed. I'm not going to question Joel's expertise, but it's going to be somewhere in between there. Remember this. I know this. Here's the thing about free agency you have to remember. He's going on the open market. He's being bid on by teams. He has a body of work. And he's not being drafted where he's slotted or, you know, being put out there on his potential. He has a body of work, and he's being paid for his pass and assuming the same, similar or better production moving forward. So that's what I think that Emmanuel Sanders is going to – now, look, the first year, the way I did my contract, he only cost you $2.5 million on the salary cap because I'm giving him a nice big signing bonus. So you know I mean, it's the second and third year that you get the big hit, but you know what? If he works out for you and you get the 3 years out of him, hey, you can handle the dead money hit after that. And you know what? I think Sanders would be great in this offense. Let me ask you this question, Neil, hypothetical question.
Yeah.
Do you think Emmanuel Sanders could have 1,000 yards receiving with the Jets next season if he were on the Jets for the whole year healthy?
Easy. He's light years better than anybody we have. He played with Ben Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. This guy, I watch Steeler games. This guy knows how to get open. He's Antonio Brown's not that much better than him. I'm a huge fan of Emmanuel Sanders.
Well, Neil, I agree with you 1,000%. I agree with you 1,000%.
He would flourish.
He would flourish in this offense. I was sitting in my seat at that Pittsburgh Steelers game, which felt like a home game for the Steelers, and I watch Emmanuel Sanders, and I know Cromartie got burnt a few times this year, but I watch Emmanuel Sanders burn Cromartie and do a flip into the end zone. I watch with my own eyes, and I believe my own eyes more than anything. So I agree with you 100%.
Ben Roethlisberger had, like, the fastest receivers in the league when they had Wallace, Emmanuel Sanders, and Antonio Brown. This guy is everything we need. I don't think he'll be too expensive. He'll be, like, number two money. Once we make some cuts, we'll be able to afford anybody. We can get Bird. We can get Emmanuel Sanders. It's not going to be a problem. Emmanuel Sanders, I'm on the bandwagon. Mark me down for it.
Let me just say this too, Neil. You're 100% right. And you know, when I laid out my contract, a lot of people said to me, "I'm not paying number one money for Emmanuel Sanders." Well, do you know what Calvin Johnson makes per year? His average in his contract. Just take a guess, and I'll tell you if you're right.
Calvin's—he's probably making like at least $10 million a year.
Try 16.
Oh wow.
$16 million per. I mean, again, people talk about number one money. I'm paying in my mock little salary there. I'm paying Emmanuel Sanders legitimate number two money, and he is a legitimate number two receiver. And why not?
Exactly.
Look, you're going to go in the draft, and you're going to get a Jordan Matthews. You're going to get somebody, Marquise Lee. And hopefully that guy turns into your number one or your 1A. I mean, look, here's something else I want to bring up real quick, Neil. I got another question for you.
Yeah.
The Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl this year. Did they have a Calvin Johnson type of receiver on their team?
They had no Calvin Johnson. It's overrated. You do not need a Darrell Revis on defense, and you do not need a Calvin Johnson on offense to win the Super Bowl. It's all overrated. You know what it is?
How good did the Detroit Lions do? I'm sorry, Neil. How good did the Detroit Lions do 2 years ago when Calvin Johnson set a receiving record? 2 years ago, Calvin Johnson set a record for receiving, right? And also Matt Stafford threw for over 5,000 yards. What was their record?
Right. What did it get them? Regular season? I tell fans on Twitter all the time, regular season records don't mean nothing. Peyton Manning's touchdown record, what did 55 touchdowns in the regular season get him? It got him 8 points in the Super Bowl against a legit defense. None of that matters. It's all 0-0. back to the drawing board once you hit the postseason.
Yeah, I just think my point here is that, you know, Golden Tate, Doug Baldwin, you even talked about, you know, Zach Miller. Look, they had a good running game with, you know, going beast mode out there with Marshawn Lynch. And you know what?
Yep.
Here's my thing. Put a serviceable offense out there. You can't be 31st in the league in passing and 28th in points or whatever they were.
Definitely
put a
not.
Serviceable offense like the 49ers had when they went to the Super Bowl. I know they didn't win.
Yes.
Even the Baltimore Ravens, a serviceable offense that can move the ball,
exactly.
can run the ball when you need to, and make big plays with some playmakers, have a good defense, and you know what? That's a recipe for success, and that's
exactly.
what I believe that Rex Ryan's philosophy is. And one other thing, John Idzik comes from Tampa Bay, learned under Rich McKay, and that team that won the Super Bowl in 2003 was not built on offense, was built on defense, and John Idzik is
right.
broken from that mold. But, Neil, listen, we're running low on time. The show's starting to wrap up.
Oh, no problem.
One quick question for you before I let you go.
Yeah.
What did you think of
yeah.
Joel Curry? Did you like Joel? Because Joel has some really fantastic insight.
Joel has very good insight. He's a numbers guy. I'm not really a numbers guy when it comes to NFL.
Uh-huh.
I leave that to other people. But his
mm-hmm.
knowledge of the numbers is second to none. And he touched on the Michael Vick thing. And I think we could do a lot worse than Michael Vick as Geno's backup. That's what struck me. That's what when he said the Vick thing, that's what hit me. Like, yeah, I like his insight on Michael Vick. But we could do a lot worse than Michael Vick as Geno's backup. I'm on that train, too.
All right, very good, Neil. Well, listen, we really appreciate you calling in tonight to Jet Nation Radio, giving us your insight. It is an exciting time to be a Jet fan. You know, I tell people this all the time. It's an exciting time to be a Jet fan. We're going to see some progress. We've already seen progress, and we're going to see even more moving forward.
Exactly.
All right, Neil, listen, you take care. Thanks for calling in, and please give us a call. We're here every week at 8 o'clock.
All right, no problem. You guys have a good one.
All right, take care, Neil. Thanks for calling in. Bye-bye.
All right, thank you.
All right, that was our friend Neil there, and Tyson touched on a lot of stuff, very very passionate fan there, seemed to, you know, touch on a bunch of things at the free agency. You know, the one thing about Tannenbaum is, look, a lot of Tannenbaum is the punching bag, and I'll be the first one to, you know, to take a swing at the punching bag, because the way he built the team ultimately led to his demise. But, you know, there was a couple of years of success, and you came close, and again, if they had won the Super Bowl in 2010, I think the opinion, even with what happened with the Jets moving forward, would be a little bit different about Tannenbaum. But you can understand, given where we ended up, why people look at Tannenbaum and point the finger at him and say, you know what, this was your strategy and it backfired in the long run, and now look where we are.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple different ways of looking at Tannenbaum. I think he's public enemy number one just for the Rivas situation and the Sanchez contract. But in many ways, I mean, he had the team set up. I think the moves John Idzik made last year were the same moves Tannenbaum would have made. Idzik's a hero, Tannenbaum's the GOAT. So, I mean, this to me is, I mean, Des, we talked about this numerous times. This is John Idzik's moment to shine. And the funny thing is, you know, heading into this offseason, he's been everybody's favorite GM. Everybody loves him. You know, he does no wrong. And I have a funny feeling, Dennis, the criticism of Idzik's going to come because now all of a sudden the Jet fans are hungry. They see talent. They see the resources. They want to see a big splash. They want to see all these upgrades. And if, you know, if like what Joel Corey said, if Idzik kind of sits back and lets things play out a little bit and does things, I'm real curious to see how Jet fans handle that. They start attacking Idzik saying, what is he doing? Why is he waiting? I mean, I think there's a chance we're going to see the Jet fans on the other side on John Idzik.
Well, I guess it all depends upon what happens on the field ultimately in the long run. In the short run, if, you know, some things stay quiet and they say, well, why did you spend this money and this and that? I'm just going to tell everybody right now that the Jets are going to have significant cap space to carry over to next year because of what I explained about the way the contracts worked a little bit with Joel, that, you know, when you sign a free agent to a multi-year deal, most of the time the bigger money comes second, third year. That's kind of where the bigger cap hit comes because you usually use a signing bonus. And from what I've seen of John Idzik, he uses a signing bonus in his first year from the couple signings that he made. I'm sure he will as well. So he's going to need to carry over some money so that he can handle the bigger cap hit in 2015 for some of these players and also be competitive in free agent and have money. Look at the Philadelphia Eagles. They carried over a lot of money, and they locked up Jason Peters and Jason Kelce and, you know, Jeremy Maclin and Riley Cooper. Well, why? Because they had the cap space to do it before free agency started and locked those guys up.
No, Dennis, I agree. And I guess, Dennis, the one question I have for you, and it's something we really didn't touch on that much, was, you know, the Jets made some news by franchising Nick Folk. So my question for you, since your numbers, and you you can break this down to me better than I know, is were you surprised by the Jets franchising Folk, and do you think they're going to work out a deal with him instead of keeping him on the one-year deal?
I was not surprised, but I was on the fence a little bit. I actually wrote an article, I think it was the 5th of February, called Izik's Tough Decision on Folk, and I laid out, you know, some of the contracts that had been given out. Dan Bailey from the Cowboys, Robbie Gould from the Bears at that point had gotten some pretty significant contracts for kickers. And it was a Graham Gano got a pretty big contract the day that he was franchised. Folk got a pretty big contract from the Panthers. Now, here was the thing. He's been working on a veterans minimum deal, so the Jets couldn't work out a long-term deal with him until free agency started. So it didn't surprise me that they franchised him to buy them some time to work out a long-term deal. I think they do, and here's why. $3.5 million, start with that number, okay? That's $3.5 million this year on the cap. You could give him, say, a 3 or 4 year deal, give him a signing bonus, spread some of that money out, maybe have a little more guaranteed money in there, and you know, maybe his cap hits a little bit less this year, maybe around what it would be this year or next year. And you know what? If he's terrible this year, if he's just horrible, you can kind of move on from him, and your cap hit won't be so bad in 2015. If he has a good year, you have parameters in place for a contract. So I think ultimately they're going to work out a long-term deal. I think so. That's what Izik wants to do. It makes sense. And you know what? Nick Folk deserves it. He. A lot of the kickers didn't have to kick 36 field goals last year. He had to, and he made 33 of them. I think he's earned it, and I think it makes sense. Because what are you going to do in 2015 if he has another good year? Franchise him again? It's going to cost you $4.2 million? No. Kind of better off working out a long-term deal. I see that Steve is also getting a caller in line here that we want to bring on right before we end the show. We are winding down. And, you know, Tyson, listen, just a great episode. Joel was fantastic, and, you know, we have such wonderful callers every week, and we want to just thank everybody. I want to let you know that you can always find us on iTunes. Just search Jet Nation Radio. You can find us on the big site. You know, we said we put this up in a podcast. It's jetnation.com. You can find my articles. Sometimes you can find Tyson's articles. Tyson's also with jetsetter.com. You can find Tyson on Twitter. It's T-Rausch, T-R-A-U-C-H, 21 on Twitter. You can find me on Twitter. It's Dennis, D-E-N-N-I-S, _ Agapito, A-G-A-P-I-T-O. I do see our caller has dropped off, unfortunately. So I guess we're going to kind of wrap up then, Tyson. And, you know, just another wonderful episode of Jet Nation Radio. We really appreciate all the downloads, all the listens, all the positive feedback. You know, we're trying to bring you as much information as we can this off season, so you kind of have a head start on what's going to potentially happen.
Yeah, no doubt. And if there was so much information shared, I kind of can't wait to kind of listen back to see what Joel said. And then you figure, we survived the off season. I mean, next Tuesday is the start of free agency. I mean, we're there. So by the time the radio show starts, we could be talking about signings, not signings, guys we missed, guys we got. You never know what could happen. So this is actually one of my favorite times of the year to see. The anticipation is all there. For the first time in a while, the Jets have resources. We have this, it's a word we love to say, but it's true resources, hopefully with the new front office and what they're doing with them. So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, who's hot, who's cold, who went into free agency and didn't get the kind of response that they thought they would get. You know, Sebastian Vollmer went into free agency last year and kind of got a chilly response. So, you know, teams have a little more money. The salary cap went up a little bit. Some teams have don't like what the Jets did, which was brought on some dead money, had a lower payroll to clear out for 2014. We spoke about Jacksonville. We spoke about the Raiders. So maybe free agency will be a little more vigorous this year than it was last year. But it's going to be very interesting to see. I do want to thank Joel Curry for coming on tonight, giving us his time. Again, his Twitter handle is at CorryJoel. You really have to give Joel a follow if you're on Twitter. And I want to thank Steve for working the switchboards tonight, for giving his time. We do appreciate it. And I want to thank my good friend Tyson Rausch for being there for me and helping out with the interview tonight with Joel and with the phone calls.
Dennis, thank you, man. This is always fun. I love talking to Joel. And thank you to the callers. And, you know, get ready. I mean, next week, I mean, go on Twitter, send us tweets, whatever you want. It's gonna be a fast and furious time on the first day of free agency.
All right, for Tyson Rausch, this is Dennis Agapito. Jet Nation, we will see you next week at 8 o'clock.